She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties. Her name is escaping me right now.
I love Hazel. She's one of my people.
They already have names.
Hi, it's me. Hi. I'm the Hazel. It's me.
I got sidetracked by Colin Firth.
Yeah, I just said fuck you to a new guest. With some very special guests.
Woo-hoo!
Welcome. Thank you for joining us, Hazel Gaynor and Heather Weber, here today, guys. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Hello. We're so excited. Great to be here.
Joining us from all the way over on the other side of the ocean. We appreciate your time. We know it's a little bit darker there than it is here right now.
Hazel, you're in Ireland, right?
I'm in Ireland, yeah. County Kildare, east side of Ireland, yeah.
Molly's other best friend, who, you know, whatever, she has another best friend, also is in Ireland.
Yes.
What about is she?
That's a great question.
In the island part of Ireland. That's all we need to know. That's
I can good. Google. She's in Ireland. I want to say.
Excellent. So am I.
I know. I will look it up when we're done filming and tell you directly. I know they left me in the middle of a pandemic and took their children, and my kids almost killed me for it. So
that's what I know.
Yeah. I cannot wait to share this story with you, but this is not a pod conversation.
And Heather is back. We met Heather at Annapolis Book Festival this year.
I'm so excited that Heather's back.
Her book, Queens of London, and it was fantastic.
It was so good. It was probably one of my favorite books back during Annapolis Book Festival.
I think it might be my favorite book from Con this year.
Really? Yeah. I'm so glad.
It's the only one I remember from Con right now. So that's a win.
That is definitely a win.
We do read
win,
a lot
Heather.
In the year. I mean, we do read a lot.
A book a week. I'm up to, I just finished my 91st book of the year today.
Robin,
I'm ashamed.
Yeah, but I don't like odd numbers, and I'm so close to 100, and I...
You're an author. You're a multi-published author. You don't get to feel shame about other people's reading habits. No, fuck you, you don't. I'm sure you got like 3 books on the burner right now. Yeah, I just said fuck you to a new guest.
I have a TBR pile of shame that's on the side of my, well, I'm going to say nightstand, but it's not even, it's on the floor. And
one,
a lot of them
two.
Are.
That's yours. Those are all TBR.
Yeah. Pile of shame. And some of them are books I've promised to read for other authors. And it's just every time I go into my bedroom, I'm like, oh, they're looking at me. But yeah, I'll get there. I go through.
They're judging me. They're judging me.
They are
collecting books and reading books are 2 different hobbies.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah.
For sure.
They're your pets. Just name them.
They already have names. They're called titles.
Not the same.
Yeah.
We shorten titles all the time. Anyways.
But we're here to talk about your guys's new book.
Christmas
with the Queen. Look at that cover.
Oh my God, that book is so gorgeous.
It is
so freaking gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yes, it's so gorgeous.
We love the cover. They did a great job.
They really did. It is so beautiful.
And
so
we got postcards in our copies.
Yes.
Yes.
We got arcs, and here's my postcard I got.
They're so cute.
I collect postcards, so when this came, I like got really super giddy because I was like, oh my gosh, it's another one for my collection.
I know, and then I got the one with, you sent me the one with the Queen's like first broadcast, and she's like, what?
I want that one too. Give that to me.
Those are all the way from Sandringham Estate.
From Sandringham Estate.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That just makes them better. That just makes them better.
Yeah, I read... I don't know if Molly has a question about this. I probably should know, but I read the author's note where you all went and visited Sandringham.
Yes,
which is
I do.
Cool.
I do have a question about it.
That's pretty cool.
So I would love to do my little
author bio.
Thank you. And then
I gotcha.
And now, you know what? This is even better. I don't remember who's doing the synopsis. So that'll be fun.
Well, as long as it's not me or Heather, because that's the worst job to ever ask an author to do a synopsis of their own book. So over to you, ladies.
No. I'm pretty sure that Heather said she would do it.
No, we've got this.
And she goes, it's the worst thing ever to ask an author to read their own synopsis. The first thing we do when we email an author is, we love to ask them to read their own synopsis.
Oh, no, you got read this. It. It's when you're asked Let's to just hold pictures. Like, I can't even remember writing a book.
No. As I embarrassingly ask every author I ever meet to just give their own synopsis.
Yeah, we can do it. We're
great. I think we should keep doing it.
Okay. Heather Gaynor and Heather Webb co-write.
Nope. Try again.
Wait, what?
Hazel Gaynor.
God damn it.
And Heather Webb.
Hi, it's me. Hi. I'm the Hazel. It's me.
I'm reading it.
Oh, you'll have to excuse myself. Molly. You can't take her anywhere.
No. I am ADHD, dyslexic. It is a mess here, but it's fun. It's fun.
It's sometimes fun.
Bite me. That's how you know we're besties, that I just yell at her. Hazel Gaynor. There we go. And Heather Webb co-write the USA Today and international bestseller Last Christmas in Paris won the 2018 Women's Fiction Writers Association Star Award. Meet Me in Monaco was shortlisted for the 2020 Romance Novelists Association Historical Novel Award, and Three Words for Goodbye was selected by Prima Magazine as the best novel of 2021. Christmas with the Queen is their fourth collaboration. Between them both, they have written over a dozen solo novels as well.
That's awesome.
No big deal.
We're a little busy.
Just a smidge. When I tell these titles look so amazing, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like I could fill seasons with them. So, ladies, would you mind a synopsis of the book?
Sure. Do you want me to do it, Hazel? Or you want
go
to pitch
for it?
It?
What? No, you go for it.
Okay.
Hazel's not.
So Christmas with the Queen is our fourth book, and it is set during the early reign of Queen Elizabeth, over five Christmases when she's first learning how to become a monarch and stepping into her deceased father's shoes. And in her orbit are two main characters, Jack Devereaux from New Orleans, who is a former Navy boy, and Olive Carter, who is an aspiring BBC journalist, and they cross paths. They have a shared history. They haven't seen each other in years. They cross paths over these five Christmases in the kitchens, where Jack is learning and becoming a part of the royal chef contingency there at the estate, and sparks fly. And there's a secret. There's always got to be a secret. And to stir things up. And so here you have it. You've got lots of lovely royal pieces, and you've got some people who work for them in their orbits. So you get a lot of different angles of what's going on with the royal family at Christmas.
It's so wonderful.
I'm such a royals fan. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, our country worked really hard to boot the crown out, but you know, I still love it. So I loved seeing Elizabeth as a young queen, you know.
It softened her, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, she's been old my entire life. Well, was old my entire life. So to see her young and in a different context than the crown. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like she was much more, you know, relaxed and personal.
Yes.
That's what we were really interested in. To write just, about, you know, that this younger version of, like, the same, she's been old our whole lives, and you sort of have this image of what the queen is and who she is, and we just thought it was really interesting to write her really as a young woman. You know, she's 26 years old mm-hmm. when she inherits the crown unexpectedly because of the going back to Edward and Wallace, and then Elizabeth's father becomes mm-hmm. the king, he dies, she becomes queen very young, just married, has two young children, and that's a very different person to this kind of very regal elderly woman that we all know as the queen. So a lot of what we wrote was really, I guess, stepping into her head as a young beautiful young woman, you know, in love with her husband and kind of then overwhelmed. But so she, it was really nice to write her sort of a different, you meet a very different Elizabeth as well as the scene Elizabeth.
It softened her in a way I've never seen her before when it comes to like picturing her as a person, right?
Yeah.
The crown makes her this hard-edged woman. The images and the stories we always get in the news and press, she was a stern woman. She was a woman of structure. She, you know, and we only got glimpses of her being granny when the kids would misbehave or the dogs were being silly or her horses were doing something. And she'd give us a little quick smile, but then she turned it back off. Yeah. And so this book is such a beautiful way to honor who she was back then. If that makes sense.
Thank you.
And I also think, And I also think Olive is right on the money for what people would have actually wanted to know about her. Because first of all, we have our first queen in a long time, right? We've gone through many kings now, and now we have another queen. And she is a young woman and a young mother. And the media in this country, in the States, you know, they put, comparatively, we'll use Jackie Kennedy, okay? Yeah. Because they're about, you know, same similar age. And what did everyone in the media talk about when it came to her? Her fashion, her hair, those kind of things.
What her smells like.
As a mom and things like that. And that's not the way that the British media wanted to portray.
What is she making for Jack for dinner every night?
But Olive is like, no, she's a young woman. She's a young modern woman. Like, we need to get that side of her.
Yeah.
I found that interesting.
And that was really fun to write. You know, this, again, this sort of the complete contrast to the queen, but it's similar age, you know, again, young woman in the 1950s. What's available to you? What isn't available to you? And the contrast of what the queen has to sacrifice and what Olive has to sacrifice. And there's really nothing in common between them, but we wanted to show ways that there were lots of things in common. And there's, it's interesting, isn't it, to see Olive sort of talking about the queen in a very different way to the male people at the BBC that would have always covered Christmas with the royal family. So she was great on to write and was a great way in to those intimate scenes with the queen where you do see that softer side of her. So she was, we loved Olive. Yeah. She was great fun to write. Yeah.
She is.
I like that.
So my first question is, Christmas with the Queen is your fourth novel together. Yeah. Wow. Just wow, guys. I don't. We love to hear how writing teams can be and your process from going blank page to finished book.
And I also want to know how you guys were paired, like how you
started working together. How did this come to be? How did this magic happen? Because writing teams, like we've met Liv Constantine, they're sisters, right?
Yeah.
And other teams are romance writers that have met. So I'd love to, we'd love to hear how this came to be.
Sure. Why don't I take the, how, what our process is, and Hazel, you can talk about how we met. So, basically, we do each take a character to start with. We work on a synopsis together and a pitch and work through an idea together. And then we both do take a character and go back and forth for our first draft. And then after that, we both really form the characters together and shape everything that happens. So there's no page that hasn't been completely marked up by both of us.
I love that.
So it's truly collaborative. And that, you know, that takes practice. I mean, I think our first book, we edited each other less. And you can see as we've, you know, gotten more used to working together that now we're like, I completely trust her and she trusts me. And we just, we work on this stuff together because we want to make it really strong, you know? So, so yeah, we just work with Google Docs, you know, Google documents where both people can be working on the document at the same time. And every time she makes changes, you know, there's a way that tracks it just like in, you know, in Microsoft Word. And then I get emails when she leaves comment bubbles, it goes to my email. So there's a lot of, you know, just ways to mark on the document that we're working on it. And when we hit a snafu, we get on the phone and we just figure out, okay, something's not working with this piece of the story, and then we hash it out, and then we try it, and then it fails, and then we get back on the phone, and then we figure it out. And so, yeah, so we're both, you know, really flexible, and sort of, we just work really well together. I think we both want the best book possible. So,
that's amazing.
We don't tend to get become a stickler over something specific, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't get, you don't get really like, no, this idea has to stay.
I mean, if Hazel's not feeling it, then we work out why not and figure out what the best avenue forward is.
That's amazing.
And do you all ever get together and write, or are you really in two separate countries working on this now?
Yeah. And always.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So on once. I think we've been together once, right, Hazel? When we were in, we went to Monaco and to Nice and to Grasse, and we had edits due. So we were researching and doing edits
fun.
At the same time. And so, yeah, we did do a bit of work together, but that is literally the only time ever.
That's so interesting. The fact that it's so cohesive and you're not like, you know, together the whole time. That's incredible.
And you know, it's funny, like even listening to Heather describe that, and we never actually sat down and had a conversation and said, right, how is this going to work? Like, who's going to do what? I mean, our first novel, Last Christmas in Paris, was written in the form of letters. So I think that that just naturally helped us get into this partnership, because we were literally writing a letter to each other through the character that we led with in that book. But when it came to copy edits, there was never a question about, oh, you just copy edit your character and I'll copy edit mine. There was just a complete understanding that this was a dual collaboration completely on every page.
Yeah.
And it just seems, there's no, I can't imagine doing it any other way, but obviously other people do.
They do, so it's always surprising.
Yes.
it's a natural partnership is what it's sounding like.
Totally.
It sounds like you guys just naturally blend together really well, and you both just know where your roles are, and so you just get into it and start working. I mean, that's how we've been working for so long. We both have our strengths, you know? Mm-hmm. So how did you guys meet? That's the big question I get. How did you get hooked up?
Well, yeah, it was a dark and stormy night, and you know.
And Heather's horse got off the road.
It was a bit less romantic. It was, so we have the same literary agent, and when Heather and I were due to launch our debut novels at the same time, and we had the same agent, and she thought that we may be able to lend some support to each other, and it's just good to have that network, isn't it? So she hooked us up on email and said, Hazel, Heather, off you go. And so we did just kind of support each other through that debut novel year. And then Heather had a great idea to write a novel set around the end of the First World War, so the armistice in 1918. And she invited 9 authors to collaborate, which she has said she'll never do again, but it was fun at the time. Nice. And I was one of those authors.
Nice.
And
nice.
We did that book. I met Heather on book tour in the States, and that was the first time we'd met in person, and literally just, you know, couldn't have hit it off any more than we already had virtually. And then we thought, well, we have all this research from the First World War, but we only wrote about the very end. So how about we try and work together and, you know, use that research in a book about the war in a different way? And literally that is how it started. And it was like a frenzied exchange on Facebook. We pitched the idea to our agent. She loved it. We were like, and she was like, are you sure? Because this could go really badly wrong. And we were like, no, we're sure it's good. It's going to be good. So, and here we are.
I thought you were going to say, like, she put you in a Hunger Games style situation. Yeah, exactly. She wrote out, Roy, she got to 9 and you're the only one left. Only one shall survive.
So it's like its own little love story, which, you know, and we never said at the time.
You just had to fight for your spot. It's cool.
That's it. We didn't know if we were doing one book together or 20 books together. And we've just each time we've said, if we're both still feeling it and life gets, you know, in our corner and comes up with another good idea that we're both happy with, mm-hmm. and we'll crack on and do another. So yeah, it's just been really great this. Fun. Yeah.
Natural we have a partners. Few fans that have commented on some of our social media who have said that last Christmas, and it's last Christmas in Paris, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that last Christmas in Paris was one of their favorites. So quite a few, actually, of our social media fans. So they were really excited that we were having the two of you on. And I was like, you have to read this one. It's so good. So, and that's I actually nice said this hear. Before we logged in, but I can't keep this on the shelf at my library. Yay! So it is definitely really popular.
Yeah, you guys are popping off.
Yay!
We say that like they're new to this. Like they've been doing this forever.
Yeah, I know. It's only their fourth novel together, and they've got like a catalog of almost 20 books together. It's fucking fine.
Every book is a new project, and it's a new story, and you don't know how readers are going to receive it or how
I know
publishing industry is going to receive it. So it's always kind of, you never know. You're kind of holding your breath hoping that people are enjoying it.
That's what we do as writers anyways, is just hold our breath and hope somebody likes what we're putting out there.
100%. You know?
I don't write. Molly's the writer. I'm just the reader.
Molly is the, I want to be a writer, but get halfway through.
Another perfect partnership.
Yeah.
So we've talked about you being writing, you've been writing together for quite some time, and it's seamless. We've talked about how seamless this is.
Very seamless.
You don't know where Heather starts and Hazel ends, right? So you even hint in your notes in this about the Easter eggs.
Yes.
Side note, now I have to read all three. Thanks for that, by the way. Like, I don't have enough going on, guys. What are your, you have tricks and tips on how you guys keep the communication and how you keep this partnership going? Like, what do you think is your biggest success here from all of this work together?
I love Hazel. She's one of my people.
Shut up, both of you. You're bros. No, this is beautiful.
I mean, it's true. It's true. It's not like, you know, it's like, if you love what you do, it never feels like a chore. It never feels like work. It's like, and of course there are times when you're writing a book, it gets gnarly, and it's like, is this the book we dreamt of? And, you know, you get there in the end, and there are, you know, snafus with the publishing side. We just always have each other's back. We just have such a laugh together. Like, we crack each other up. And if you got to see us on book tour, when we leave the venue, I mean, we have the best time at the event, but when we leave the event, I mean, there should be a documentary following us around, to be perfectly honest, because we're great entertainment.
That's what we say about us. Silly. I'm not going to fucking lie. Yeah. We're fucking hilarious. The episode we filmed last, this sneak wibbly wobbly timely wimey stuff, guys. But the episode April and I filmed last, her and I could not keep a straight face. Every time a word came out of either of our mouths, one of us was making the other laugh.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with the fucking book. Okay. So what was I saying?
How much we love each other. How much we love
each other. We all love each other so much. But no.
But we were saying about how does it work? And you know,
right.
It absolutely works because we genuinely get along. We have similar thoughts very, very often about what the book should be doing, what's not working. It's like a unibrain thing going on. And I think you could find 100 people and try and get them to write a book together, and it just would never, ever work.
No. Yeah.
And it's either luck or fortune or a bit of both, but that's how, I think that's why it works, and that's why it works so well.
And the interesting thing is, you all are balancing working together with also releasing your own books, because Heather, did Queens of London come out this year, or was it?
It did.
Last
year. Yeah, in February. Yeah.
So you've released two books this year, one with your writing partner and one by yourself. And that's a lot of work.
More on the deck.
It's a lot of work. And Hazel's had the same in the past, where she's had two books or a paperback release and a new book coming out. And it's a lot of juggling.
It is. Sure. Well, I mean, no offense, Hazel, I haven't read you solo yet, but I will, because
yet,
after
yet
this.
Yet being the operative word.
Yet, yet. Yet is yet. Being the operative word, because I instantly saw Heather in these pages, and the fact that I couldn't tell who was who, that means you write just as well as her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So that means... You have a similar writing. Like, it's just, it all works. The math maths.
Like, and except for, like, random one-offs, most authors that write as duos, that's what they do. They only write together. They don't write separately as well. So I just, I mean, I feel like that workload, that's so awesome. Much. You guys are awesome. 100%.
This feels like a love fest.
We'll always stroke. And what here's the thing. If you listen to the pod, you know we don't stroke everyone's ego.
We don't.
Yeah.
No. You know we don't.
We were actually going to be doing an interview at a bookstore, and the author they picked for us, we were like, yeah, so sorry to tell you this, but we did an episode featuring one of her books and we hated it, so there's not kind things in that. So maybe you don't want us to come and interview that author.
It wasn't that we didn't just hate it. We were not kind.
Molly didn't even finish it, and we don't ever do that.
Okay, well, I'm queer, okay? I'm queer. I've always been open about my sex. And she did not represent my community well. Mm-hmm. And she was very, very hateful towards other communities in this novel. And it was just...
It didn't work for you.
It didn't work.
No,
so.
No. And I'm always willing. And I'm always willing to give authors second chances. Right.
Yeah.
But...
But probably not live in front of a bookstore.
Yeah. No. Actually, but you know what? That was really gracious of you to say that rather than go ahead and everybody feel totally awkward. You know, so I think.
Yeah. And well, and heaven forbid they stumble across that episode of us just tearing into her.
Yeah.
Like,
No, so. That's not. No, it was way better what you did.
Yeah. It was never going to work.
So, okay. I keep mentioning. No. So I keep mentioning this. Sorry. It's your fourth book together, guys. Surprise.
Did you already say that in this episode?
Yes. I've mentioned it several times. Sure? That this is their fourth novel together. But this is the only one set during the Christmas season. Did that
second.
Come?
Second.
That's what, that's the only, but only the second that is set during the Christmas season. Is that not what I just said?
You said it was the only.
I'm done with my life, I guess.
That's a bit dramatic.
Hi, have you met me? Did this come about as you guys were writing, or was it like, oh, we're definitely setting this during Christmas? Like, how did the theme of the holidays come about?
It was Christmas all the way. But you know, last Christmas in Paris was our first novel together, and the premise for that is it was the Christmases through the 4 years of the Great War. So when the war began, there was a politician said famously, it will be over by Christmas. The war started in August. They said it would be over by Christmas of that same year. And it was still going on 4 Christmases later. So that was the premise for Last Christmas in Paris. And our character's narrative goes through those years. So Christmas with the Queen, I think, is technically our first novel that's set purely at Christmas. It goes through several Christmases.
Several.
We jump the years, but we meet our characters, Jack and Olive, the Queen and the royal family. We meet them every Christmas. So it really does lean into, and it was so gorgeous for us to write those wintry, cozy Christmas scenes, which we couldn't do as much in Last Christmas in Paris, because that did take place outside of Christmas as well. But we just loved the Last Christmas book so much. We knew readers loved it so much. We've written, summery books, and we really wanted to go back to that cozy winter vibe. And we were both all over it. And we had lots of different ideas and different historic periods we talked about before we settled on the 1950s and the Queen. And we were just excited about it. It just seemed clear how we could do it. And the premise of the Queen's Christmas Day message that she broadcasts to the nation. Yeah. That was how we were going to keep bringing our characters all back together when the royal family moved to Sandringham Estate. So
yeah,
it had a brilliant framework to hang a love story around.
Yeah.
And who doesn't like writing Christmas? Like it's,
yeah,
it was just.
Yeah. And we've spent the past couple of Decembers reading Christmas set. Well, I should say winter holiday set, because we did a few weeks ago do a Hanukkah story.
Yeah.
We read the Matzah Ball. So we've been doing these like holiday romance, and you know, some of them are pretty campy and they're like Hallmarky, you know?
And I dig that. Like I'm here for the
I've camp. Never seen a Hallmark Christmas movie. I cannot believe that's a true statement, but it really is. But what I liked about this is a book we read last year called One Day in December continues to take place on the same day of the year.
Mm-hmm. I love for that book.
Decades.
Me too.
Such a good story. Yeah. And this kind of had the historical fiction vibes that were similar. Like it's at the same time of year. You know that they're going to meet up. There's that yearning, that longing. We know it's going to happen.
That's where the Harry Met Sally shit came from for
yes.
me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly where like, oh, it's that time of year again. That means we have to run into each other.
And then I also felt like there were vibes like Love Actually. Like that's such a great movie for this time of year. And like, it really is that if you can't say it at Christmas, when can you? You know what I mean? It's that moment.
Yeah. That's exactly the Christmas vibe. That's the whole point of all the Hallmark movies.
And to, to pair it with the iconic Christmas, you know, speech, you know, because I mean, this is something deep in history. Like she talks about, having to replace her father doing this and like what that was like, because you know, the King's Speech, right? So we've all probably seen that. I mean, if Colin Firth's in it, your girl is there. Yeah. That man, he can get it. He can get it, at any age. I got sidetracked by Colin Firth.
There's not many people can say that.
But, you know, the King's Speech, we get this story of how the king had a speech disability, right? And how scary that was. Well, now you've got the first woman to be leading the crown in a long time. And, you know, what is that going to be like? The 1950s, women. Like, there's a powerful statement here, you know? You have some strong women in this. And that's the same thing that I liked about Heather's book that we read earlier this year, Queens of London. Those are strong women. I love a book with strong women in it, of any genre. I just want a strong woman.
Yeah. Strong women are a theme in our writing, separately and together. And I think, you know, to have a figurehead like Queen Elizabeth, and as you say, not only was she the first queen that had been around since Victoria, but this was the first time, because the broadcast, the Christmas Day broadcast, was started by the Queen's grandfather. Mm-hmm. So there had never been a woman speaking directly to the nations, the Commonwealth. So this is really massive historic moment. And then to bring that through to the first televised, like this was bringing the royal family literally into people's houses, and you know, whether that worked or not, the reader will learn. But it's such a huge seismic thing, and to have had that tradition continue all the way up to the Queen's, you know, the year before she died, is just incredible. As I say, whether you like it or not, and to listen to the transcript, it is a mark every year of social history. It's fascinating. As a historic document, the broadcast, which you can go and listen to, a lot of them are on YouTube. So if people are listening to this and are interested, go and look on YouTube to Queen Elizabeth II's Christmas Day
broadcast. I'll put some of the links down here.
Brilliant. Yeah. Because it's really interesting to hear her. And maybe
Sure.
In and out of a few and see how they change. But strong women, how can you not write them? So,
her confidence changes too through the years. You see it in the videos. Yeah. You know what I mean? She gets more confident in herself. And you see this in this novel too. You really take her from an unsure woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we were all 25-year-old women. We all know what it was like to be panicked just to have to make a life decision every single day.
I am a 43-year-old woman and I am still panicked every single day.
Word. So
relatable, humor, yes? Still relatable. Relatable. Yes. Historical fiction, you know, some people say, oh, you know, but I won't relate to it because it's all set in the past and people were different then. It's like, but we all still, you know, there's evergreen emotions. They pass through time. It's, mm-hmm. you know, what we wear mm-hmm. is the only mm-hmm. difference. And often what we wore then was way cooler than what we wear now. But the emotions.
Maybe thicker.
So they're relatable, evergreen, timeless emotions that thread throughout time. And that's, you know, that's yeah. what's brilliant about a historical novel. It makes sense to us now, you know.
And with Olive and the Queen, I think you said this earlier, Hazel, that they don't really have a lot in common, but they do have some things in common because they're the similar age. You look at the differentiation between wealth, right? You have the literal queen. So, yeah. of course, she grew up without want, right? And then you have Olive, who economically is nowhere near where the queen is. Mm. And yet they have the same struggles of just being a woman.
Mm-hmm. Trying to survive.
Being out there in a world of men. Olive is in a world of men at the BBC. The queen is in a world of men at, you know, literally everything because she's the queen and none of the government is women. So you get the vibes that, like, kind of doesn't matter where you are in your life. This is a common thread for women.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to bounce back to my questions about you guys.
How dare you?
I know, the audacity of me. We'll get back to the questions about the book. So in the author's note, you guys talk about a trip that you guys took together to help write this. We would love to hear about this if you're willing to share about your little journey of exploration.
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, one of the very big perks of writing historical fiction is if you are able to get to a location, you try to, because mm-hmm. there's, you know, there's just so much that you can't get from a book or that you can't get from online even,
right.
No matter how much we try, it's not the same as being in a location. So, I had actually reached out to Hazel and said, I'd really like to go to Sandringham. What do you think? And she said, let's do it. So we looked at our schedules and we actually just kind of got under the radar. It was the last week that they were open before they closed for the season. This was last mm-hmm. fall and late last fall in October. And yeah, so we took a train from London. They were on strike. We had to juggle that, move that around, almost missed it. But we did get there and took a bus out to the estate. And, you know, the whole area is this beautiful, hilly, little villages here and there. There's farms, there's vineyards. So we pulled in and took a tour of the house. And right away, we were blown away that it was nothing like Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
It was the polar opposite. It was mm-hmm. very cozy. It looked lived in. It was beautiful, of course, and well decorated. But it looked like they had just gotten up from a puzzle at the table. And there was a stack of books there and in one of the rooms. And then, you know, there's a library. So we walked all through and asked a million questions, annoyed the heck out of one of the docents who we finally confessed that we were writing a book. And then he's like, oh, okay. Well, no wonder. Cause we just kept, well, what about this? And when was the kitchen renovated and how big was it? Was it on the eastern part of the building? You know, the guy was like, who is asking whether the kitchen was on the eastern part of the building or not? But we needed to know cause Jack is a chef. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, and as a writer, my first instinct is to go dive headfirst into research, right? It's the easiest part for me. It's
where it's the passive part. You're like absorbing right. it. And that's exactly what those trips are like too.
And I lose myself in it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm sure, you know, you could lose yourself at that place. Just putting yourself in the mindset of not just the queen, but Olive and him, you know, and all of them just being there together mm-hmm. at this place. Like, I get it. So since we're on the research part, how do you guys break the research up? Do you divide and conquer? Is it a free for all?
It's like a free for all, isn't it, Hazel? I feel like we're. So this is one of those things that is magical.
About it.
I don't know how it works, but it works.
Real?
We don't even talk about I should cover this topic and you should cover that topic. We just kind of love this.
It just happens.
Yeah,
and we just screw you guys in your perfect marriage. Yeah. Screw you guys.
And it's so, do you know what though? It's so casual in a way, but I guess although we're writing together, you know, the day job, you're on your own at your desk. So I need research books on my desk. Heather needs research books on her desk. The fact that we both went online and ordered the same research books will not surprise you at all.
Awesome. I love that though. I love that. Telling
each other, and then we would find this gem, or you know, we'd find something about cooking in the royal kitchens, or we'd find something else about a royal tour that Elizabeth and Philip went on that was going to be part of the book, and we're like, oh my god, I found this. Be like, yeah, I got it. I ordered it yesterday. You know, it was so funny. And I guess that again, you know, we were just in the same headspace, you know, we just wanted to find
it's a special relationship.
It's pretty special.
If you guys ever need a personal research librarian, hit up her.
Yes, we need you, April.
That is my job. Molly's talking about the research side being, you know, a favorite part of hers for the writing. I don't do the writing, but I'll research the hell out of anything.
I love it.
My problem with the research is I told Heather about this when I saw her last, but I go into research mode and next thing you know, I'm an expert on bootlegging in Vermont in 1920.
No one needs to be an expert on.
But here's the problem. Then I forget what I'm writing about.
Yes.
I'm just focused on the fact that how did this happen and why are this happening and who's in charge and why didn't nobody catch this? Because it was Vermont and it was so close to the border and people should have known. Yeah, see what I mean?
The problem we have, you know, you get asked this, I'm sure. It's like, you know, how do you do the research? And, you know, how do you find out what you need to know? And we always end up with way too much information.
Doom scroll.
It's kind of pulling back. Mm. It's like, okay, well, maybe everybody doesn't need to know every bowl of soup that the Queen ate at Christmas, you know? So you just have to pull it back and like blast that nonsense out at, you know, in the pub to your friends.
But it's not nonsense. You would kill at Jeopardy.
Well, exactly. I'm really, really, really good at a pub quiz because I know far too much about lots of things and it's all from research that's never gone in a book.
I have a massive knowledge of nothing and an expert of nada.
Exactly.
So hit me up.
I really thought it was interesting that Jack is American and his primary cooking style is like New Orleans comfort food.
Yeah.
That is a very acquired taste.
Yeah.
And it made me laugh that this is what Philip was like craving. He was like, no, I want Jack. Like that guy can cook. And it just feels like that would, like, I'm like, that's so not what I would picture. And I love it. I thought that was really cool. I love that he was American.
I'm trying to think I'm not sure how we figured out that we needed him to be American, to be honest, because we've written other books, you know, our first, they were all English characters. Mm-hmm. You know, we wrote Three Words for Goodbye. They were two American sisters. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Meet Me in Monaco, we had a French perfumer and a British press photographer who worked in sort of Grace Kelly's orbit for her wedding.
That's super freaking cool. That's been on that. I've been eyeballing that book. I promise you, I'm eyeballing that book. But now I feel like I have to read them in order.
One for the summer.
You have Easter eggs.
Yeah. So, I don't know how we landed on that, Hazel, but when we figured out that, okay, these people would be crossing paths if they were doing these particular jobs, then we sort of figure out who the characters would be from there. And
I think we had a conversation somewhere along the line about, wouldn't it be cool and interesting if instead of having two British characters?
So Queen Elizabeth is, while she is a good center of this, she's not our main voice in this novel. We have old friends, Olive and Jack, who reconnect in their service to the Queen. Can you tell me about the development and how Olive and Jack came to be? And who talked first to you guys? Was it Olive? Was it Jack? Who was the first voice that was really kicking the story off for you guys?
Well, we talked a little bit about how we were thinking about who would work in the service of the Queen. And that's what decided the jobs. And then from there came the characters. And then Hazel talked a little bit about, an American and a Brit together. In terms of their specific jobs and the way they were developed too, I've always wanted to write a New Orleans chef. It's been on my list. I'm a bit of a foodie and I love New Orleans, and I thought that would be a lot of fun, especially in juxtaposition to English food, which is, you know,
no offense,
not
traditionally
bland. It's not these days at all, but it
that's right. Like curry powder these days.
Yeah. So that was part of the impetus for that. And then, you know, we wanted Olive to have a reason to be helping the Queen. And so it made sense to put her in the role of the BBC reporter or aspiring. But in terms of developing them together, it's funny, as we started writing their story out, we didn't realize we were going to flash back. We started with an enemies to lovers kind of thing.
Ooh.
And it just wasn't working because Jack had already lost, you know, it's not a spoiler. It happens in the first chapter, but he's a widower. And so to make him super angry towards Olive on top of that, it just wasn't working. And we had a lot of chapters, you know, pieces that we ended up cutting out. We're like, you know, maybe they were friends and they knew each other. And then we settled on, well, if he's an ex-Navy boy, then it would make sense, first of all, how he ended up in London to begin with. And second of all, let's not get into the war. How about we open it, their past, on Victory Day?
Yeah.
When the war ends, because it's again, for a Christmas novel, we're not looking for, you know, death and destruction necessarily.
No, you got plenty of heartbreak in there for a Christmas novel. I promise.
Yeah, we mixed enough, a little bit of that. We like a little bit of that bittersweet element to balance
a little bit, woman? Come on.
The sweetness too. So.
It's a beautiful story. It's great.
And a lot of people don't realize that the fog that hit London, that, people really did die. That's how clouded it was.
Yeah, it was horrendous. It caused thousands of deaths and settled over London for about a week, and this toxic, so all the fumes from the factories couldn't get out of the cloud cover. So, and anybody who saw The Crown would have probably remembered the episode about the fog. It's really a powerful episode. And it was literally, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. So it was a very authentic, historic, dramatic moment for us to start this story, and it leads to, you know, our way into getting to meet Jack and what's happened with him. It was terrible. It was a really devastatingly tragic event, and, you know, lots of laws were changed.
And you've set the scene and the tone for the start of the book to sort of have this dreariness and to build towards, you know, a happily ever after, because she's Christmas shopping when she is tragically killed, Jack's wife. Her name is escaping me right now.
Andrea.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Andrea.
I was like,
what is her name? But she's Christmas shopping. And it's just like that would have been a reality. And what
Yeah, exactly. And that's why absolutely. It felt authentic, you know, because, and I guess what we were doing with that as well, you know, like you just said, it's bittersweet. And for a lot of people, Christmas, you know, is a joyful, lovely time for family. But of course, it emphasizes those gaps in families as well. So we wanted to sort of look at Christmas from what it means in lots of ways. And it isn't all, you know, caroling and mulled wine and gifts under the tree.
Yeah.
You know, there's real emotion. Right. Emotions are heightened. It's like with war. We've written about war because emotions are heightened. Emotions are heightened at Christmas time over the holidays. And that queen having just lost her father, Jack then loses his wife. And it is authentic, and that tragic event of the fog did leave a lot of empty chairs around tables that Christmas. So we wanted to talk about that, and obviously then you know, we follow them through to a happier conclusion.
You guys go from dark to light, but you're really leaving. This is not a surprise because this is history, guys. I'm not spoiling the book, but the book ends right before World War II. We are right. We are just, am I doing that history right?
We're actually, the book opens.
This is after World War II.
After World War II. I'm mixing up my war timelines. I apologize. Never
no worries. There's so plenty of darkness mixed in history, isn't there?
There is.
But actually, you are right about the book we wrote before this. So Three Words for Goodbye is sort of on the eve of World War II. So Europe is about to go into World War II.
Yeah.
We go post-World War II.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
So what war are you guys going to go to next?
That's a really good question.
You know what? Next episode.
There's plenty of history.
Seriously. I listened to the audiobook and I kept getting the Harry Met Sally vibes. And I didn't know that this was like a thing for you guys until I read the online synopsis. So it's really predominant for me. Where am I? It's needed for the story. But why does this have to be Jack and Olive's story? Like, why? Their hearts have been broken enough. Why? Why? Tell me why.
Why do we torture our characters?
You tease us.
That's our job, is to be evil to our characters and give them.
I don't know if you know what that means, but no. I pick. You know, it's just this poor couple, you know, they've already been through so much, guys.
Yeah. Molly, you liked the book Me Before You.
Don't even get me started.
Oh, that's tough. Yeah.
I read that whole series. It's so beautiful. Yes. I sob like a baby every time. I've read it, Me Before You, several times, and I sob like a baby.
Yeah, it made me cry too.
Really yes.
But it's lovely, you know, and I think there's obviously different ways of writing a story that involves romance, wherever if it's friends to lovers, enemies to lovers, whatever it might be. And I think, as I said, like, you know, the Christmas is a real marker on everyone's calendars. And it is that sort of When Harry Met Sally one day kind of vibe of this repetition of tradition.
Yeah.
And we all know we're going to get to Christmas again. So what does that mean? And it's the royal traditions that keep bringing Jack and Olive together. Life gets in the way, but life does get in the way. And I know sometimes
it's hard to think about that,
but it just felt real. It's like life is not very often a Hallmark movie that's, you know, packaged neatly together, and we all live happily ever after. And we always want to write authentic, real stories, and that's why we made it really hard work for them.
I literally finished a book today, maybe like an hour before we logged in here, that they fall in love in 2 weeks, and I'm just like, okay, first of all, side note, my husband and I fell in love in 7 days.
It happens at both ends.
But I prefer the stories that take that build up, that take that yearning, that take that coming together and falling apart. In my real life, that's not what I have. But I guess I'll keep him. It's been 15 years now, so I think we're in for the long haul.
But that's
the story I want. I want this is the only time we see each other, but it's good.
Yeah. And you know what? We've had a lot of reaction from readers who have said, because of this, the slow burn of this romance, it feels perfect for this time of year.
Absolutely.
Because people are rushing and racing around, and readers are saying, when they pick up Christmas with the Queen, they have to stop and take time, because that's how this relationship is playing out. So it's almost like making people pause, which is fabulous. I just, you know, whether we intended that or not, it's a wonderful thing.
Just say you intended it. It's fine.
We completely intended it.
That was the point.
I love that we're on this conversation, because this is my next question, actually. Ooh, a major theme throughout this novel is the complexity of life and how things are difficult for everyone at times, right? Mm-hmm. Olive is pretending to be a widow so that her child isn't treated poorly. And poor Jack is an actual widow, right? Widower, if we're going to be correct, Molly. Their stories, while difficult, are equally oh my God, Molly. Their stories, while different, are equally difficult and heartbreaking. You both are able to highlight the truth about the times while still making it this book hopeful. How? No, seriously, how? As writers, do you keep the light when you're writing something so heavy?
Interesting. Hmm. I'm not, and I guess, you know, the heaviness comes from just the reality of life that Jack and Oliver are experiencing. But the book is written in a way that we add humor to lighten anything that's gotten quite serious in their lives. We then have a scene where it might be Olive with her daughter Lucy, and a child in a book always brings lightness, just the way they interact, the way they see the world. Olive with her mother and father, who are quite hilarious as well. Jack with his partner in the restaurant, Mason, Olive's friend. You know, there's lots of side characters, even the interactions between the Queen and Philip and her corgis and her sister Margaret, who won't get out of bed, you know, because she's had too many martinis the night before. So yes, there's a seriousness, but there's a playfulness throughout the book as well. Yes. And I think that brings the hope that there is always a yes. sense of this is all going to be okay, you know, and we want the yeah. readers to feel mm-hmm. that, and that we are moving to a place where mm-hmm. this is all going to be good. So yes, definitely humor, light and shade, and those yeah. gentle moments mm-hmm. as well.
Well, I
but
don't
want to Christmas. Keep... That's Christmas time.
It is yes. Christmas. And, I'd say even in all my other books, my solo books too, even if it's a tough subject, bringing in a little humor or a little bit of intrigue. Sometimes it's the intrigue yes. that keeps you going. It's like it might be kind of a heavy subject, but if they mm-hmm. if there are enough interesting story questions yeah. that you mm-hmm. have to learn the answer to, you keep going even if it's a little bit dark. So there's a lot of different ways you can yeah. Yeah, infuse yeah. the narrative for
well,
sure.
Well, I could keep you guys here all day. Yes.
That
with
would be
questions.
Unfair.
We
that
could be really talk unfair. All day as well.
I know. But let's talk about the future, huh? What's going on next for you both? Do we have more books coming from the both of you? Are you writing, like, who has what coming out? Tell us the things, guys.
I'll let Hazel go because she's got one lickety split right around the corner.
One coming out in June. We haven't yet, I guess for our dual work, we don't yet have any news for you, but we will come back and tell you when we do.
Of course.
But we both have solo things going on. So my next book is out in June of next year. It's called Before Dorothy, and it is my imagined life story of Dorothy's Auntie M from The Wizard of Oz, which, given all the wicked excitement at the minute, is extremely exciting. Yeah, so it's set in Kansas during the Dust Bowl years of the 1930s.
Well, we happen to have an opening for a guest in May if you want to come on and promote it. We don't have a May guest right now.
It's a date. Let's do it.
I would love it.
Thank you.
Look at us.
I love how this
Booked and blessed. Booked and blessed.
Thank you. And Heather has an amazing book coming out in 2026. Is that right, Heather?
What? Yes. Tell us
so,
the things.
Thank you for that segue, Hazel. Yeah, it's right now we're working on the title. I have a title I love, but we're testing a few to see. But it is about the curse of the Hope Diamond, the last woman who owned it, and the beginnings of women working at the Smithsonian Museum, and it's 1919 DC. I love your reaction.
And they're booking you for next May.
You don't understand. I love when history has this like gross, scary side and people don't like to touch it, right? Because if something's cursed, like King Tut or Cleopatra's crown or whatever, like obviously that's not real. It's just a piece of, no, curses are real. And yes.
And
yes.
you're
going
to have to
things,
judge
Heather,
that
please.
For yourself in this book.
And I think the Smithsonian is like the ultimate library job. Like mm-hmm. being a librarian for the Smithsonian mm-hmm. would be so freaking cool. The only one that would be more cool than that is being the keeper of the vault, which is what Disney's librarian is called.
But
that's the official title.
But the most current, isn't the most current keeper of the vault started at like 20 and still there?
Oh no, he retired finally, and now there's another one. It's only the second person to have this job.
That the first guy, The first guy was there till like his 70s or something, yeah. Right, April?
Yes. What a job title. That's amazing. What do you do for a living? I'm the keeper of the vault.
Keeper of the vault.
Wow.
No big deal.
He probably only gets like $10 an hour. So we might not want to be too happy for him.
Well, I mean, that title's worth a lot.
Yeah. So, well, we've appreciated your time today, ladies. We know
thank you so much.
Busy lives.
Thank you both.
So much.
Oh my goodness. We cannot wait to have y'all both back. Besties, we only got one episode left.
Next week, we are interviewing Olivia Dade.
Olivia motherfucking Dade.
Well, I hope that's how you announced us to the show. I mean.
So we want to thank you both for joining
us.
We've
been saying we're very excited because we loved Heather and we were so excited to meet you, Hazel. So that's
yes.
How-
Oh, but yes. Thank you. I hope I didn't let the slide down.
No!
You didn't. This was great. And
no,
I'm
this
serious.
Was spectacular.
We really do have an
and
opening
we love Heather.
In May. So
Heather,
you...
come back all the time.
I'm already there. I've already written it in my diary. It's happening.
Oh, shit. We're in trouble now. No. Yeah. Oh, man.
We'll email you.
Well, besties, we will see you next week, next time.
Season finale for season 7. Yeah. This and then that one. That's it.
We'll see y'all next time.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties with special guest authors Hazel Gaynor and Heather Webb. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Today's book was Christmas with the Queen by Hazel Gaynor and Heather Webb. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins. Editing by Thomas Watkins and music is Sleep Sweetly by Brigida. Don't forget to follow the book besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the book besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, get lost in your favorite book.